It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Russell, who for 5 years has shared with us her extensive research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative, executive, and judicial processes in America. And now, Mae Russell.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Russell in Carmel, California. It's Dialogue Conspiracy number 255, February the 7th, 1977. For the last 2 weeks, I've talked about Jimmy Carter, the new president of the United States, and his appointments from particularly the IBM Corporation and the meaning of those appointments. I think it's very serious to stack the cabinet with so many people from this huge corporation. I spoke also last week about launching secret space station satellites that IBM is putting up in Los Gatos, California, to Poughkeepsie, New York, for conferences and document exchange that will be launched by NASA at taxpayers' expense. IBM makes $5.4 million every day of profit after their taxes are taken out, and they use the taxpayers to launch their secret space station satellites for direct communication of particular agents. And this week I want to talk about the larger conspiracy. I want to talk about the Trilateral Commission. I did speak about the Trilateral Commission before the election of Jimmy Carter. I mentioned the reasons I couldn't vote for Jimmy Carter on Dialogue Conspiracy. But once the election was over, there was a large article in the Washington Post about the Trilateral Commission and other newspaper articles, as if the news media just discovered that this organization or group existed, when all the evidence that it existed and was behind the selection of Jimmy Carter for president was evident long before the elections. The Trilateral Commission is important because of the influence of the Rockefeller family, particularly David Rockefeller, on our domestic policy, our foreign policy, the role of the Council of Foreign Relations, members of that council on the Trilateral Commission, and the secret Bilderberg Society that so many people fear. And it's these three groups that I do want to talk about today: the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Bilderberg Society. On Dialogue Conspiracy, we cover a lot of territory every week. For 5.5 years, I talk about evidence of particular murders. I've talked about the legal cover-up of these murders and other crimes and subterfuge related to them. We've talked about the role of the intelligence community in weather modification, mind control, control of food for mass populations, domestic kidnappings and terrorisms, various hoaxes such as the spoof of the murder of the Romanovs at the time that the Tsar was overthrown in Russia, items such as the kidnapping of the Lindbergh baby, the mishandling of evidence in the prosecution of Tokyo Rose, the wrong selection of the patsies of Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan Sirhan, Arthur Brammer, James Earl Ray, the creation of the Manson family I've talked about, and the Chowchilla bus affair. I've covered many different items through the years, and I've tried to relate them to one central core, and I've asked myself through all of these various items and many, many more that I've talked about, is there a common denominator to all of this research? Is there a bottom line? When did the conspiracies all begin? And what, if possible, can be done to end them? Is there a solution to this giant net which seems to close in, or is it out of control? There have always been small conspiracies long before we had intelligence operations. There's conspiracies in our own families between siblings and rivalry of children with their parents, and little minor, what we call minor conspiracies for certain favors or privileges. We see large conspiracies that have no relationship, say, to the spy system or the intelligence community. But the research that I've done has specifically to do with several things. One is the use of murders, kidnappings, and assassinations for control and profit, and the use of the intelligence community to create profit and power. The rich have always wanted more money. They never, very seldom ever, gave up with a certain amount and divested themselves of more than they needed. The rich have always used slave labor to increase their wealth. They promoted their own wealth through jewels or buildings or church prestige power groups and maintained their power to protect money and property. But the modern day conspiracies center around the two most important things, I believe, are the oil conspiracy, because that controls transportation, airplanes, boats, automobiles, and factories. This conspiracy beginning in the 19th century when the first oil wells were drilled in America by the Rockefeller family out in Colorado. The oil conspiracy and the world narcotic traffic. And I think those are the two big conspiracies, and I think in the last 25 years they've become one and the same. When the CIA goes into Air America importing narcotics, and the police department distributes narcotics, and the large ones are used inside the dealers, inside the intelligence community, and with the highest levels of government, such as with J. Edgar Hoover and the CIA and the local police departments. The narcotics are important in terms of profit. The drug traffic in America is a $17 million a day market, and the oil profits are the same, and narcotics and oil are the motives really behind the conspiracies that I've studied. The four people that are responsible, I believe, for giving the marching orders in the line of conspiracies are David Nelson, John D. III, and Lawrence Rockefeller. They help organize terrorist gangs. They support the left. They support the right. The Rockefellers provide the law offices for the cover-up of these conspiracies. They can control the police agencies and both political parties. The Rockefeller financial holdings are gigantic. There's institutions such as the Chase Manhattan Bank, the Chemical Bank, the Bank of New York, the Metropolitan Life Insurance, the Equitable Life Assurance Society, Rockefeller Center, Rockefeller Foundation, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, the Rockefeller Family Fund, the International Basic Economy Corporation, the First Boston Corporation, Kung Loeb and Company, J.H. Whitney and Company, Stone and Webster Securities, the American Express Company, are just examples of the interlocking power of the Rockefeller Financial Group. They dominate and run various multinational corporations such as Eastern Airlines, Standard Oil companies such as Exxon, Mobil Oil, Sinclair Oil. They control McDonnell Douglas Corporation, Borden Company, American Smelting and Refining, the IBM International Business Machine. The Rockefellers are important because it was David Rockefeller who formed the Trilateral Commission that we'll get into and selected Jimmy Carter as the next president of the United States. The Rockefellers have tried to overthrow Bolivia and Peru. They provide fascist money for Portugal. Portugal is going into a fascist junta similar to Chile and Argentina right now. They provide arms to South Africa. They own the U.S. congressmen through various conduits. They use the CIA for their personal army. They're so far-reaching that their interests vary, such as cattle raising in Australia, hotels in Puerto Rico and Liberia, concrete and cement factories in Brazil, cotton mills in Nigeria, paint factories in Venezuela, steel mills in Turkey, petrochemical plants in Argentina, bus lines in the Virgin Islands, bowling alleys in Great Britain. That's just a sample of the infiltration of the Rockefeller Holdings, the Rockefeller Foundation. And they control 120 banks in Colombia and in Panama, 42 branches in Peru, of the Chase Manhattan Bank, 24 branches in the Honduras, 66 banks in the Netherlands. They have banks in Saigon, South Vietnam, Bangkok, Seoul in Korea, Athens, Greece, and they control 1,200 branch banks that dominate the economy of Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Zambia, South Africa, Rhodesia, Nigeria, Ghana, and eight other African companies. They have their tentacles in all of these places. The article that came out after Jimmy Carter's election, after he won the election, right after the nomination, and well, it was dated January 16, 1977, in the Washington Post. It began this way: if you like conspiracy theories about secret plots to take over the world, you are going to love the administration of President Jimmy Carter. The right-wingers are going bananas over it, so are the left-wingers. It looks to them like the apocalyptic pieces of evidence that fit every wacky puzzle, the missing link in every weird scenario. Sound the alarm. The trilateralists are coming. The trilateralists are taking over the government. This is from the Washington Post. The article goes on to say the trilateralists are members of a private international organization that was put together by David Rockefeller. In the book David by William Hoffman, there's a remark about Rockefeller's political position and comment, why would he want to be president of the United States? The presidency of the United States would only be a demotion from being head of the Chase Manhattan Bank in New York City and head of all these Rockefeller foundations. Being the president would be an embarrassment, and he wouldn't have the power that he has as a private citizen. The trilateralists hold meetings every 9 months to discuss what they call international problems. They hire professors from the various universities to write their reports. They selected Jimmy Carter, went down to Georgia, and selected him as their candidate for president of the United States in this last election, 1976, and Vice President Walter Mondale. They're both members of the trilateral. Secretary of the State Cyrus Vance is a member of the Trilateral Commission, as well as the board of directors of IBM that I mentioned the last 2 weeks. Secretary of Defense Harold Brown is a member of the Trilateral Commission and IBM board. Secretary of the Treasury Michael Blumenthal is from the Trilateral, and the Chief of National Security Council, I can't pronounce his name, Agnew Brzezinski, is a member of the Trilateral Commission and the man who makes up the foreign policy. There are at least 13 members of this Trilateral Committee up till now in top positions of government as of January 77, and six others have been established as possible policy advisors and will be appointed to Jimmy Carter's staff. Now, if David Rockefeller appointed and headed the Trilateral Commission, serious questions have been asked about this group, and the answer varies upon who's interpreting the facts, if we have the facts. There have been a group of people, the National Labor Caucus, that say that the Rockefeller interests are forming a world fascist organization, a takeover from the days of Adolf Hitler, and the Birch Society. I'll go into their arguments. They say that the CIA and the Rockefeller Plan are taking over a communist conspiracy, that these are communists. And the third world people are afraid of the trilateral group because they feel that their interests will not be represented among these particular people. The argument that David Rockefeller and the trilaterals are a fascist organization is important. The Rockefeller family has been running this government behind the scenes for many, many years. They've accumulated the largest profits of any corporation in the United States. The Exxon Corporation have the largest profits in the United States, and people like Henry Kissinger, a man like that was a protege of Nelson Rockefeller, and at the time Henry Kissinger got married, his wife was receiving allegedly $100,000 a year from the Rockefellers, and probably still is getting it. And Henry Kissinger went around the world to these various countries representing the interests of the Rockefellers while he wheeled and dealed and made peace or war, whichever you want to interpret it, with these various nations that have been conflicting in the last years, and there has been a lot of bloodshed and torture shed. The Chase Manhattan Bank influences every aspect of our farms, our businesses, the stock market. In the book David, the author says that David Rockefeller said he liked the job that he had because it influenced every aspect of our lives. The offices of spying were put under the Rockefeller umbrella. The British intelligence, called Intrepid, was put in Rockefeller Center in New York City. And the Rockefeller lawyers, Alan Dulles representing the same law firm that Dulles worked for the Rockefellers, one of the board of directors of the Rockefeller Combine, was helping to bring the Nazis to power through the law offices that he headed. And then he brought the Nazis to America and all around the world when the war was over. The Rockefeller family's been very close to British intelligence, American intelligence before and after the war, and also to Hitler's intelligence. John J. McCloy is a very much important part of the Rockefeller Combine. He was chairman of the board of Chase Manhattan Bank. He worked with Konrad Adenauer. He made him the High Commissioner of Germany after World War II. And Adenauer is the brother-in-law of McCloy. After John Kennedy was killed, John J. McCloy was put on the Warren Commission. John Kennedy had wanted to change the tax structure of the oil companies, and the oil depletion allowance would be removed. And after he was killed, that was never put into effect, so that Kennedy was going against the interest of these oil profiteers. And John J. McCloy not only was chairman of the board of Chase Manhattan Bank, but he made terms with the State Department as the lawyer for the Seven Sisters, the seven large oil companies, that they would determine foreign policy in the Middle East and elsewhere, not the State Department, but the oil companies would determine foreign policy. And Alan Dulles, who was very much a part of the entire Rockefeller Chase Manhattan Bank and the combine there, was an integral part of setting up our entire intelligence apparatus. By 1954, the major responsibility for all American foreign policy in the Middle East was given to the major oil companies, and that involved the combine of the Dulles brothers and the CIA and John J. McCloy. The CIA was formed in 1947. Iran was overthrown, Mossadegh was overthrown, and the Shah of Iran was put into power. Mossadegh had nationalized the oil fields in Iran. In 1954, they were put back in the hands of the Shah of Iran and the private companies. This was the major, first major counterintelligence operation of Alan Dulles to overthrow a country and get the rich oil findings back in the hands of the people that they wanted to control and deprive the private citizens of the profit of these oil companies. The Washington Post article says, for the conspiracy chartists, it all fits. The National U.S. Labor Party has been predicting for months that once Jimmy Carter was in office and handpicked by David Rockefeller, that he would move in favoring those international corporations that were part of the Rockefeller, Bilderberger, Trilateral, and Council of Foreign Relations combat. The Washington Post said they predicted that Jimmy Carter would deliver a world fascist government. The overt excuse for the existence of the Trilateral Party, the Trilateral Commission, it's called, was, this is in quotes, to direct our thinking to the demands for economic justice from the poor and develop nations, the Third World, due to their capacity to disrupt the world. The overt excuse, the cover story for creating the Trilateral Commission, was to direct the thinking of the American people and those people who run the world to the demands for economic justice that the poor were making and the developing third world nations, and see about distributing the capacity to distribute to these people their needs. Now, that may be the overt excuse. We had the food plan that Herbert Hoover had for helping the poor, starving people in Europe. We had the Marshall Plan, and later we found out that these were generally mostly rip-offs, and that the food money was really going to arms in these countries to form police states. The truth is that the cover story of finding out the needs for the poor and the underdeveloped nations through the Trilateral Commission just doesn't hold any weight, and there is reason to be suspicious of it, because up to date there's no known country on planet Earth that the Rockefellers have ever considered not to exploit. They've helped hardly, well, I can't think of any one country, and I can think of 77 military dictatorships that have been put into power since World War II was over, where people were trying to improve their lot. We see the police SWAT teams formed inside our own cities. It began with the when Patty Hearst escaped from Los Angeles and six people were burned alive. We were prepared psychologically with headlines that the SWAT teams were ready for food riots. And we see no new plans, large mass plans for jobs for the masses. Last week, Jimmy Carter came out and wanted to give $50 to every American, which only would go to the utility companies because of the fuel used up in the month of January. It would go back to the same people who are profiteering, the gas and electric companies, because of the hard, cold winters. And there's no evidence that the Rockefeller combines, with all of their power, have made provision for low-cost food. People like Dick Gregory have experimented on foods like certain wheat germs and sprouts and bean sprouts and means of feeding people without food riots. But the federal government has made no indication of preparation for that, and there's every indication that they are going into the same genocidal starvation that Adolf Hitler wanted, and which is being incorporated into the thinking of these people in the Trilateral Committee right now. We're going into areas of electronic banking that the Rockefeller want, with ID cards to cash your checks, credit cards. You can't rent a car without credit cards. There's no mobility unless you have two credit cards and a checking account. The Rockefeller Combine is linked to the drug houses, mind control, the Max Planck Institute in Germany, the methadone clinics, and behavior modification. They're indifferent to the loans of small farmers, small businessmen. They started their profits by shooting labor organizers a long time ago, and members of the labor unions, the strong labor unions, are really anti the working man, the low class, so to speak, working man, are part of the Rockefeller Combine. There's every reason to fear these people and believe that the motivation for the Trilateral Commission will not touch the large population of planet Earth. As soon as Jimmy Carter became president, in came international business. This was predicted by the National Labor Caucus. And immediately the team from the IBM, the Rockefeller team, the Trilateral Group, the Bilderbergers, and the Council of Foreign Relations stocked the entire cabinet of Jimmy Carter. Carter relies upon the Trilateral Commission for the appointments he makes, and it proves without any doubt, according to the Washington Post, that our foreign policy is going to be shaped by an exclusive circle of people. This is from the Washington Post, admitting now that there is no doubt that Jimmy Carter has stacked his committee. The Trilateral Organization has all the interlocking features that everyone who studies conspiracy fears. As I say, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberger Society, and the Trilateral. The Trilateral is made of professors from Harvard, MIT, Caltech, the Brookings Institute. It's made up of multinational businessmen from the Exxon, the Chase Manhattan Bank, the Coca-Cola Corporation, Texas Instrument, and Sears Roebuck. They have labor leaders from the AFL-CIO, the United Auto Workers, and the Steel Workers. They have the members of the news media from CBS and Time Magazine, Carl Rowan. These are members of the Trilateral, the Chicago Sun-Times, directors from the New York Times, and the Los Angeles Times. And the media with these combines is very well tied up. The minutes of the Trilateral, of course, are secret. The meetings are secretive. They're not open. Any reporter who attends them cannot comment on the meetings. The funding for the Trilateral Commission that handpicked Jimmy Carter comes from the Rockefeller Foundation and Exxon, the Ford Foundation, the Lilly Endowment Fund, the German Marshall Fund, and gifts from Wells Fargo and Texas Instrument. And the four Rockefellers have divided up planet Earth pretty well between David, John, and Nelson. They've got this four brothers, and they have this pretty well divided up. Jimmy Carter was sent to Japan to speak for the Trilateral Commission in May of 1975. He had already announced that he would be a candidate for President of the United States. Now, trilateral translated means that three superpowers, Japan representing the Asian control, the United States, that's the Western Hemisphere, North and South, and Europe, handled out of Belgium with Prince Bernhard, would control the power of most nations. They would agree to boycott or direct, so these three major nations, the foreign policy for their sphere of influence around the world. These are all industrial regions, and they would decide between them what are the trouble areas. And they don't want to, according to their purpose in life, is not to cause economic friction among themselves. They want their investments to go straight. They don't want any economic problems, and they want to, in quotes, deal adequately with the rest of the world. Now, what's adequate to them may be inadequate to us. And the thinking behind the Trilateral is this: if they fail, then all Western wealth will be threatened from the poorer nations, or from regional wars, or nuclear wars, or blackmail, or disruption of profits. And if they gang together, they can avoid these pitfalls of these various events taking away from these huge profits. As I say, the Third World sees the Trilateral with a great deal of suspicion. There are various articles coming out of publications on the Trilateral. They see it as a rich man's club. Many people, such as the Chicanos and the Blacks, are already being feel that Jimmy Carter has let them down with his appointments and sitting back and appointing these kind of people, considering the organizations they belong to and what they do. The foreign policy of the past 25 years, according to the members of the Trilateral Commission, and remember, they're also on the Council of Foreign Relations, and most of them belong to the Bilderbergers. They say that for 25 years, their system of getting together the industrialized nations such as Japan and the Netherlands and the United States is successful and peaceful. But if you look at what's been going on in the world, there's been a lot of bloodshed, and anything short of major atomic wars has been taking place. The last 25 years have been successful for the multinationals, and it's unsuccessful for the native populations. Just take a state of New York or the city of New York City and ask how successful Governor Rockefeller was, or the United States government has been, in terms of native population. The trilateralists look at themselves as a God blessing to mankind. They think that they're really preserving the capitalistic system for the betterment of the world, but a lot of people don't agree with that. There's one man, for example, Samuel Huntington from Harvard University, who's a friend of Brzezinski, who's now chief of our National Security Council. And Huntington wrote a book called The Crisis of Democracy. And I'll give you some quotations of George Ball and Huntington to show you about the trilateralists. Huntington said in his book that the problem with this country is that is in the people themselves. The trouble with the United States is the people, because we have an excess of democracy. Too much democracy threatens the authority of the government. Passions must be tempered, or the U.S. will become ungovernable. A president must organize a coalition of leaders and take orders from them, not from the voters. I'm quoting a book, The Crisis of Democracy, by Samuel Huntington, a paper he delivered on the Trilateral Committee. The president must take orders from a group of coalition of leaders, from the multinational, that is, and the military, and not the voters. Once he is elected, the president works with a key establishment. The American government must strip back higher education. This is what Hitler wanted to do in Germany. Mr. Huntington says the news media must be regulated, and the burden of the Huntington Report is that the country should submit to misgoverning. This is in the Washington Post. It said the burden of this report is that we would have to submit to the misgovernment of people. And a member of the Trilateral Commission in the Crisis for Democracy says that there's too much government, and once a man is elected, just identical to Premier Thu in South Vietnam or these other puppet governments we've put in, such as Mr. Parks in South Korea or Marco in the Philippines, once they're in and the election's over, then the people in the higher multinationals and military should control the government, and the voters shouldn't have any more to say. The Birch Society has been speaking out against the Rockefeller interests, the trilateralists, the Council of Foreign Relations. They claim that these people are too communist. They say the CIA is a communist organization, and they're giving the country away. The National Labor Caucus says that the Rockefeller combines and these organizations are fascists. They're Nazis. They're continuing where Hitler led off, and they brought the Hitler agents to South America and to Africa and Asia and America, and that we're going into a continuation of the Fourth Reich, and the National Labor Caucus feels that these are not communists, that the fear is from the right and not from the left. And I have to agree with the National Labor Caucus on this issue. I don't see any indication that any of these people involved or are working for anything but genocide. George Ball is the main advisor, one of the main advisors of Jimmy Carter. He's on the Trilateral Commission and the Nat Council of Foreign Relations. And I quote a current book by George Ball called Diplomacy for a Crowded World. This is what he said. Ball proposes that because he sees certain things could solve problems as being unlikely, he would have to report to what he calls triage. Triage, translated, means famine, to starve certain people out. He says, we must decide what portion of the present world population must die and manage our food supplies and development in such a way so that we determine who dies and who lives. Now, George Ball quotes William Paddock for his authority, and Ball and Paddock are advising Jimmy Carter. Ball endorses Paddock's proposal to reduce the population of Mexico. This is William Paddock's idea. To reduce our neighbor in the South from 58 million to 28 million people. He proposes, and is explicit in the same way that Hitler eliminated population in Europe, by forced slave labor camp. In an article called Famine, 1975, January the 6th, William Paddock said, "We are going to clamp the border of U.S. and Mexico down, then watch them scream. There's nothing that really can be done with them. Mexico cannot support its present population on a stable basis. The population will have to be cut to 30 million people." And I got an estimate that the reduction aims in this country will reduce the population by 64 million people through the controlled energy crisis. And this is consistent with George Ball in a book, Diplomacy for a Crowded World, that we must determine who dies and who lives. Now, this is Jimmy Carter's chief consultant, and William Paddock saying that they'll cut the population of Mexico down 30 million and will watch these people squirm. I hardly believe that this is a communist conspiracy or a leftist conspiracy when you consider that Mexico recently found some of the richest oil finds in the world and they haven't even yet developed them. Mr. Brzezinski, who is the head of the Trilateral Commission, he's the key personnel executive director and on the Council of Foreign Relations, and also heads our National Security Council under Jimmy Carter, is one of Rockefeller's hired persons. He's from the same exile community as Edward Teller, Hans Morgenthau, and Henry Kissinger. He's a white Russian Polish gentleman who came to Harvard and was trained by people expertise in Nazi law and government. Brzezinski wrote his own book. It's called Between Two Ages, The Transition to Techno-Electronic Society. And this is what Mr. Brzezinski talks about. And keep in mind, he's been appointed by Jimmy Carter as the head of our 1984 National Security Council. Brzezinski wrote in his book, The Transition of Techno-Electronic Society, this is what he said, "With the use of computers, human behavior itself will become more determined and subject to deliberate programming, and it will soon be possible to assert almost continuous surveillance over every citizen." It is worth noting also that Mr. Brzezinski is a consultant to RAND Corporation, and RAND is very important in the art of behavior modification and artificial intelligence and brainwashing. This gentleman wrote a book, Between Two Ages, The Transition to Techno-Electronic Society, where he says we'll use computers to control human behavior, to determine and subject people to deliberate programming, and assert continuous surveillance over every citizen. Mr. George Ball, the head of our advisor to Jimmy Carter in Diplomacy for a Crowded World, calls for triage, which is starvation of people, to decide what portion of the world population what must die and manage their food in such a way as to determine who dies and lives. And William Paddock, a key Carter advisor, talks about reducing the Mexican population out of 30 million people, watching them scream. There's nothing that can be done with them. Mexico cannot support them. Now, this is the kind of cabinet that is surrounding Jimmy Carter and his family as they enjoy the services of the White House and can sit back and let these people take over. The Council on Foreign Relations, which is the Rockefeller-founded institution, run by David Rockefeller, John Rockefeller III, Nelson Rockefeller, and Rodman Rockefeller, was formed as early as 1921. This was after the Tsar was kicked out of the Russian control. The Tsar's family no longer ran Russia. The Romanovs didn't run it. 1921, the Lenin was in, and Stalin, in the Soviet Union, the USSR, and 1921 to combat the possibility of communism taking over around the world, a group was formed. This was called the Royal Institute of International Affairs, the British Roundtable Financier Group, and by 1930 they formed the Rockefeller family, formed the Council of Foreign Relations, and David Rockefeller is currently chairman of the board of the Council of Foreign Relations. On the board are people like Cyrus Vance and Mr. Brzezinski and Paul Warnke, who Carter insists that he has to have for an important position for strategic arms conversations with the Soviet Union. His appointment's been held up. Joseph Califano has been appointed on the cabinet. Dean Rusk is part of the Council of Foreign Relations. Ted Sorensen, who Carter wanted for head of the CIA, and he was turned down, and George Ball. And the four Rockefellers and Stephen Bechtel and C. Douglas Dillon. Douglas Dillon was a former Secretary of the Treasury. He's a member of the Chase Manhattan, the board of the Chase Manhattan Bank. The entire Rockefeller Roundtable of the Council of Foreign Relations is made of people closely linked and part of the Rockefeller Chase Manhattan holdings. Another group besides the Trilateral and the Chase Manhattan Council on Foreign Relations is that well-known or not so well-known Bilderberger Society, and that was formed in 1975. The Bilderbergers met in Turkey and had Robert McNamara there and Mr. Brzezinski and George Ball and William Buckley and Mr. Cyrus Sulzberger from the New York Times, and very much part a selection of the Bilderberger again was Mr. Mondale and Mr. Carter. The head of the Bilderberger Society, Secret Society, is Prince Bernhard. He's the chairman. He represents I.G. Farben, along with the Rockefeller Combine, one from Germany at the height of the war and one from the United States, the group from the United States, the Rockefellers, here in Prince Bernhard, working with I.G. Farben in Nazi Germany and working in the SS for Adolf Hitler. Prince Bernhard married Queen Juliana Wilhelmina of the Netherlands. They own the Shell Oil Company, another oil combine. The Bilderbergers got together to meet in 1954. It was founded in 54. Their meetings are secret. It's a secret society where all the Rockefeller operatives and their allies are invited. Helmut Schmidt was attending the Bilderberger meeting in 1974, and right after that he became the prime minister in Germany. Walter Mondale attended that meeting, and shortly afterwards he came home and announced his role in the presidential campaign. Margaret Thatcher attended the Bilderbergers in 1975 and months later became head of the British Conservative Party. They also sit, along with the Trilateralists and the Council of Foreign Relations, the interchanging board, all of them put together by the Rockefellers and their intelligence combine, and decide what is good for the world in these various countries, and which country should be overthrown, and who should be funded by the World Bank, and where fascism will be put in, and where the old Nazis will be redistributed. Dean Rusk, former Secretary of State, was former head of the Rockefeller Foundation. The heads of our government, of the Treasury, and the State Department, and the Council, National Security Council, are all linked to the Rockefellers, and for this reason, more and more reason to be suspicious of the Rockefellers. A lot of this has been known before, but now that the Howard Hughes hoax has to be terminated, and certain people like Chester Davis or Bill Gay or Nadine Huntley seem to have been running the whole affair of Howard Hughes, and I've talked about that many, many times, we know that if Howard wasn't conscious and there's no handwriting to prove that he made decisions even as early as 1946, or certainly since 1957, and there's no physical evidence of a use, then there has to be a puppet master behind that. And again, all roads behind the use seem to be going tighter to the Rockefeller Combine. An example of control is this Dean Rusk, who's now advising Jimmy Carter, former Secretary of State, former head of the Rockefeller Foundation. He's worked for Rockefeller before he went into the State Department. He was a very avid hawk on Vietnam, promoting the war. The entire war team of Cyrus Vance and Rusk and the whole gang are with Jimmy Carter now. He escalated the war in Vietnam for many years, but the importance of an appointment of Rusk, who not only was Secretary of the State, but head of the Rockefeller Foundation, can be translated in terms of dollars, if not horror, just in terms of dollars. And up until 1965, the Chase Manhattan Bank had assets of $12 billion. In 1963, late 63, John Kennedy was killed, and within 2 years, by 1965, 2 years after John Kennedy was killed, we were in a large-scale war escalating in Vietnam. The Chase Manhattan assets went up $23 billion. They doubled in 5 years. The holdings went from $12 to $23 billion in a five-year period. And two members of the Warren Commission, John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles, were part of the Rockefeller Foundation, Chase Manhattan Bank. They were their careers were interwoven with the Rockefellers and with the government intelligence systems their entire lives, and two members of the Rockefeller interest sat on a Warren Commission of six appointed people. Two were from the Rockefeller interest at a time where John Kennedy, according to memos, wanted to withdraw from the war in Vietnam in 1964, just like he withdrew from the Bay of Pigs. He had some advisors there, the Green Berets and advisors, and wanted, after the election in 1964, to pull away from Vietnam. John Kennedy was killed November 22, 1963, and within the short time, by 1965, the Rockefeller holdings had gone, in that short period of time, from $12 billion up to doubled to $23 billion. And the very people making the war, Alan Dulles and Dean Rusk and these type of people, were directly linked to the financial profits of Chase Manhattan Bank, and yet they were making foreign policy that influenced this entire country, that brought these terrible taxes and bloodshed, lives in Southeast Asia, and perversion of what was so-called necessity of war that went directly into profits. Last night on television, there was a three-hour show on the biography of Senator Joe McCarthy, and the clear-cut evidence that Joe McCarthy ran a communist Red Scare to create his own position in the Senate and to run for re-election at home. It was very popular on the home front. I wish that the same people that put on those shows would do a biography every week of famous people living now. You see, Joe McCarthy is dead, and it was a while back, and it certainly bears repeating for this generation, but it would be interesting to do a biography of Alan Dulles, for example, because if Joe McCarthy used the Red Scare to get a seat in Congress, which was merely a $50,000 or $60,000 job at the most, what about the Rockefeller family using Alan Dulles and Cyrus Vance or Dean Rusk to accumulate double billions to get into a $23 billion holding, just double the profits after the war escalated in Vietnam? I think we could update some of our investigations to who's in power now instead of what happened in 1950 or 1960. Alan Dulles, during 1930, he worked for the Rockefellers. He managed their fortune in many roles. The Rockefellers were investing in cotton and sugar and tobacco in the South. And Alan Dulles was the head of the law firm of Sullivan and Cromwell. And they also represented the Rockefeller interests. And they represented the Nazi IG Farben. In 1920, 1930s, the Rockefeller Standard Oil had secret cartel alliances with the Nazi IG Farben. They made money supplying Hitler and selling what Hitler needed, and arms and oil or whatever, during and up to the time that Hitler declared war on us. And then they made profits during the war at the other end. They didn't lose either way, whether at war or at peace. The profits of the Chase Manhattan Bank and the people involved around the Rockefeller continued to increase. There is a good book. The U.S. Labor Party, the National Caucus of Labor, has a book. It's $2, and you can order it. I have the address if you want to order it, or you can telephone me at my house or write to the station. But their address is 231 West 29th Street, New York City, New York, 1001. That's 1001. National Labor Caucus has a book for $2 called Carter and the Party on International Terrorism. And it has a breakdown of the Rockefeller family, the foundations, their Wall Street friends, their links to the intelligence community, their various conspiracies, more than we can do in one program here. But you could order the book and buy it and read it. It's worth having in your library. Well, that's a little bit about the Rockefeller Committee in 45 minutes, the Trilateral, and the Bilderbergers, the Council of Foreign Relations. It is a combine that is controlling Jimmy Carter. It's obvious in the cabinet, and I don't know what we can do about it, but that's the way it is right now. This is Mae Brussel. We have to call it for today, but I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy in Carmel, California.
Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for many years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California.